is Music Respawn. I'm Kate Remington with John Robert Metz. Hey, it's so much fun to catch up with you again.
And likewise, getting to talk to you last year, I think. Yeah, last year at GDC was fantastic, and I always look forward to chatting with you about music and other things.
Yeah, and it's going to be great. And last time we talked, it was like the morning after you'd been awarded Rookie of the Year at the Game Audio Network Guild's award ceremony. So I'm wondering, are you feeling a little less like a rookie now?
Yeah, it's funny. I don't know if I felt like you felt more like a breakout award than a rookie. I still am in the grand scheme of things. Like, I've only been doing this for, at the time, that was like 5 years, and this is, I guess, my sixth year that I've been writing music for video games. So I guess that's still very much a rookie in the grand scheme of things, especially when I look at some of my colleagues who've been doing this for decades. But yeah, I guess I feel a little bit less like a rookie. Somehow that validation of recognition of my work or whatever kind of carries through, and I feel a little more confident. But yeah, that was a really fantastic, really amazing evening, and that morning I was definitely pretty stoked. Still, yeah, I feel a little bit less like a rookie. I feel a little bit more like I think I'm generally producing pretty good stuff, and people seem to like it, so. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's always a great thing. And you've just released the soundtrack for the RPG adventure game For the King from Iron Oak Studios. And it's an amazing game. It's a very cool fantasy role-playing game. The King of Farul has been murdered, and the Queen is rallying champions to bring order to the chaos. And so I'm wondering how you got attached to the team. I mean, how did you get this gig? Because it's really amazing.
So actually, that's humorously enough, is kind of connected to Fossil Echo. So Gordon McGlattery, who was our lead sound designer, who I brought into Fossil Echo, we're good friends and we've worked together on a lot of things, but he brought me in to this thing, which was, you know, being made by this team in Vancouver, which is where he's from. They didn't know what kind of sound they wanted, but they had some idea of the kind of score that they were looking for. And so he put my name in front of them and shared some of my stuff, and they liked it. And he was doing sound design for our Kickstarter at the time, and they liked some of my stuff. And I got introduced and I took a stab at writing something, and they hadn't really figured out what they wanted it to sound like. And apparently what I did was exactly the thing that they didn't know that they wanted. So they loved it, and I got attached to the project. And it was one of these weird things where Gordon was working on the Kickstarter, and then he passed the baton to another gentleman, Jordan Ivey, who is now another good friend of mine, another Vancouver person. He used to work at BioWare in their sound department, and now is a lead sound designer on this. And so it's been an interesting kind of experience, you know, getting this gig through friends. The game audio community is really kind of super wonderful, and we're all kind of looking out for each other, and sometimes you have something where you know the right person for the job. You know, I have brought sound designer friends in to work on things that I've been working on where, like, I think they're sonic voice is the right thing for this, and I'll recommend that to a developer. And in this case, it was, you know, the opposite sort of thing, where a sound designer, Gordon's a great composer as well, but his style is not my style. And, you know, the sort of thing that they wanted was something that he thought I could do. And so he brought me in on it. And that's how that worked.
That's fantastic. And I was thinking about how you said that writing music for a fantasy game was, you know, kind of on your bucket list, or it has been for a while. And so what in particular about writing for fantasy games, like, really appeals to you?
Well, okay, so that's an interesting thing. And I think it probably stems from my love of fantasy films and things like that. Like the I don't know, when I was a teenager was when, like, Lord of the Rings was coming out, and those scores were so influential on me. And I actually wound up, my very first kind of major project was of all things, was for a fan film being assembled by several friends of mine who all went on to be, like, film majors in college, but they were working on a fan adaptation of part of Tolkien's The Silmarillion, The Tale of Beren and Lúthien. And so they made this, like, hour and 45-minute movie, which somehow I got pulled into on the production side as well as the music side. And so I wrote all this music for this thing. It was never quite finished, and so it never saw the light of day. But getting to write kind of like this kind of sprawling fantasy score, sort of inspired by the films the film scores, left a very big impression on me, and I always kind of wanted to kind of revisit that in a different sort of way. Between that and things like Basil Poledouris's Conan the Barbarian scores and all these other classic fantasy scores from film and video games, it's just so much, it's ripe fodder for invention and adventure and other things. But you get the idea. And so it's something I've always wanted to do, like put my own spin on it. And this game gave me a neat opportunity to do that and to kind of give a sort of a different approach. Instead of just big epic stuff 100% of the time, we had this idea that we wanted to have this small party, like a kind of a party of bards was our idea, that we had this small ensemble of minstrel type instruments that would take the lead, and then there would be bigger stuff behind them. So you have this feeling of like a bunch of musicians following you around as you travel the lands of Farul. And so that was my own way to give like a different spin on it.
And that was so cool. And I totally picked up on that because it does sound like that. And what's neat, too, is the music that you've written for, you know, the primary little band of musicians, troubadours that accompany you. It changes depending on which region of the game you're going to. So it's such a cool idea because it ties everything together. But it also gives you an opportunity to kind of mix it up a little bit, too, with all the different regions.
Yeah. So every different land that you explore and uncover has its own sort of like 5 or 6 minute long piece of music that's associated with them. I've designed it in the interactive score system to kind of shuffle and rebuild, you know, start in different places. So you don't always have the same thing every time, but each region has its own distinct sound. So like the very beginning, you have the Guardian Forest, and the Guardian Forest is kind of like, you know, Western Europe, kind of like Germanic sort of folk instruments and that sort of kind of, you know, more traditional, like medieval sounding things. But if you get out to like the Parched Waste, it's a little bit more, it has some more, I want to say more of the, like the Arabic world sort of blending into it, or at least an impression of it. I mean, it's a fantasy world, so I can kind of do things that maybe are not historically accurate, but that have the right sound. And so other things like the Burning Forest is very Asian influenced, and so the score for that area has that sort of sound to it. Thank you. And so you have different directions for each realm and different, subtly different ensembles for each realm, or the sometimes the same instruments but played in a different manner to kind of give that realm its own flavor.
Yeah, and that must have been fun because, you know, a lot of times games are just set in one, you know, kind of general homogeneous region, although that's less common these days, but it still happens. And with this, you had a lot of latitude and a lot of inspiration for the different directions that you could take the music. So that must have been a lot of fun.
It was. Originally, we'd planned on making, you know, just like a long track that was for every, you know, realm, and then it would just, like, crossfade from, you know, different layers for each realm you're in. So you'd be like, oh, now we're in the layer where it's this. But we realized very quickly that, like, that if we did that, we couldn't have unique themes for each realm. We could have the most just different colors. And that wasn't as interesting as writing, you know, whole pieces of music that gave each realm its own, not only its own sonic palette to draw from, but its own, you know, its own tempo, its own theme, its own motifs, et cetera, et cetera. So it was really kind of fun to kind of get to paint these little pictures, these little portraits of these different places.
Oh, yeah, I bet. And it just adds so much to the world, too, because, I mean, when you're traveling around and visiting different countries, whether in real life or in games, it's always really neat to hear, you know, kind of local color. So it really helps bring the world alive. Well, let's run down some of the instruments that you use, because you've got some traditional ones, recorder and strings and low winds and brass. But then, you know, I'm hearing these instruments that sounds like they date from the Middle Ages. So maybe you could run down the whole list of the amazing instruments that you used.
Boy, ooh, the whole list. I'm surrounded by a lot of them. So one of the biggest things I tried to do with this score was kind of step up my live instrument game a bit. We still didn't have a massive budget, so we couldn't hire an orchestra and a million professional players and everything. So in this one, actually, I tried to play everything myself. And for the most part, I think I did okay. Let's start like in the woodwind section. So I had soprano, alto, and tenor recorders. An array of Irish whistles and penny whistles, including a low whistle, which I got a fair bit of mileage out of. I brought in my cousin, who's a very good Irish Celtic musician, and in this case employed him for his his flouting abilities for one of the combat tracks, kind of the low key one, and kind of give that a Celtic sort of flavor. On that end, I had some Irish percussion, Baudrun, I can never say that name right, drums. I used some mountain dulcimers and some sampled hammer dulcimers with different types of hammers. Not always playing them in a historically or even technically appropriate style, but using them to the best effect that I could in that case. I used some real weird stuff. I have an instrument called a hosophone, which is a truly absurd instrument, but it is a coiled plastic tube, like surgical tubing, and a funnel in the end, and a trumpet mouthpiece. And I use that, it sounds very weird. It actually sounds a lot like a French horn, but it's pitched higher, and it's basically a natural horn, or a Jaeger trumpet, if you want to get, even more historically accurate. But it's this weird thing, it sounds dumb, and I can make it sound real dumb, but I can also make it sound kind of threatening, and so I use that for a lot of, enemy sounds and some of the battle bits, and when you encounter enemies on the playing field, sometimes there's a little fanfare, and that is hosophones playing little kind of things. It's real dumb, but it works quite well, I think, in context. I did a lot of stuff with I have a duduk, which I used for some of the more, I guess, the more hot realms. The Dropstone and Parched Waste areas. It's an Armenian instrument. It's not actually from the places that we think that it's from, but it does have the right sort of sound for that thing. And I use that as a not playing it in the traditional style, to kind of add some kind of double reed sounds in some areas, kind of like a crumb horn or something to that effect. When I started the project, I should say, I only had a normal B-flat clarinet, but I used that and did some weird pitch shifting to provide strange, murky, lower, contrabass clarinet sounds, or low woodwind sounds for some places. And I used it in its normal register for some nice woodwind kind of background stuff, and sometimes some solo stuff. By the end, I had acquired a bass clarinet and used that for some of the later tracks. Apart from that, things like, more traditional instruments like trumpets and French horn and things of that sort. I think I might have used some small hand percussion here and there, shakers and claves. And on one of the tracks, I definitely employed this. I have an instrument called an autoharp. It's a free string lyre. It is, chromatic, like three octaves or something like that. But you press these bars in that have different chords, and so they basically act as dampers, and they just stop all the notes that you don't want to play, and then you strum it. Except mine is horribly out of tune, and a lot of the felt pads have fallen off. So I just embraced that, and wound up doing some real crazy weird sound design stuff with it. I used it just for, strange effects, but then I found that if I took a contact microphone and placed it under the two bass strings at about halfway, it formed a weird resonance point, then I could tune it, tune those two strings to a discernible note that would match the key I was in. And then if I plucked it or tapped on the back, I would get this weird resonance percussion instrument that sounded kind of sort of surreal, distant, and strange, you know, using that contact mic as a pickup. You can hear that like in tracks like The Temple of the Kraken and stuff like that. So if you go into any of the dungeons in the Sea Realm, you'll hear some of that stuff, and it's kind of this distant, echoey, watery sound. I feel like there's more stuff that is definitely on the sample front, but that's pretty much all of the actual physical acoustic instruments that I played for this thing to kind of breathe some life into it.
Wow, I'm just sort of picturing you surrounded by all of these weird instruments in your studio, sort of like a really warped toy shop or something. Just
I could turn the camera on right now and you would see just that. You are describing my studio. Yes. Is it a warped toy shop is the correct thing. Everything is here, everything is in its place. You never know when you're going to need to like just I see if this instrument works for this moment. And a lot of the score for this, some of it was written on pencil and paper. I'd sketch out ideas here and there. I'd kind of like outline the themes or the, the chord progression or ostinato patterns or whatnot for sections. But, a lot of it wound up being kind of like improvised in pieces as I went along. And the ability to just pick up a horn and try a line out and see if this theme works here, or this counter melody works here, or whatever, became really invaluable as I went ahead. So just having them at hand, is kind of wonderful.
Yeah, I can imagine. And the theme that keeps reappearing throughout the soundtrack is so perfect because it has so many possibilities, I guess. I mean, it can sound very grim and dire and remind you that this is going to be a really tough journey and a really hard campaign, and yet in other places it sounds a little more hopeful. And so how far into the process did you kind of hit on that theme?
That was literally the first thing I wrote. That was the thing that got me the job, effectively, was that theme. The
Thank you.
it was kind of intrinsically connected to the chord progression underneath it, but I could divorce it from that and turn it into something heroic. I could make it something that was sad and mournful. It started off as kind of like this idea of this kingdom, you know, that had a great tragedy happen, you know, in its recent past, and it was not the glowing beacon of hope that it was, but there was still some hope there, and then that kind of evolved. And the very first thing I wound up doing was scoring our Kickstarter trailer, which is a weird, interesting thing. They tried to basically communicate some of the setting and some of the story through narration and visuals, and the visuals were this unspooling in reverse order of this team of adventurers. And we start with the body of one of the blacksmith characters, and she's laying on the ground of a crypt, and like the camera pulls out and we kind of reverse back up, and then she's fighting this Lich King, and she's like entering the caves, and then she's outside the temple to this crypt, you know, and then she's with her archer buddy, and they're fighting a crag, and there's a big fight, and we realize as we go back in time that we started off with three adventures, and we're seeing this story play out in reverse as they've all slowly fallen away and died in tragic ways. But the effect of the dramatic arc is that we start off at a very sad place and we end somewhere heroic when they're all together and they're setting out on this quest and things, and they were kicking butt and taking names and doing it for the king, and everything was great. And so we had this this dramatic arc which starts off sad and ends heroic, except technically the story wound up in the opposite order. And that was kind of the first thing that I wrote, was this thing that starts very soft and ends, you know, moves through like multiple statements of the theme for each character in turn. And taking that as kind of the basis of this, you know, getting to explore multiple modes of treating that right off the bat was kind of invaluable for being able to then thread it through the rest of the score in ways that were hopefully equally meaningful. Providing those moments of heroism in combat or those little moments of respite in, at night or when you pitch camp or when you go to towns or whatnot.
What an interesting idea. There's just been a couple of trailers that I've seen like that, and it's such a neat idea. And again, yeah, I'm sure it was a really invaluable exercise to do that. And when we were setting up our conversation about the soundtrack for the King, you mentioned that some of the pieces were written a couple of years ago. And so did your ideas for the music kind of evolve? Well, of course they did evolve over the years. But I'm wondering if anything, if there were any like major changes in how you thought about the music in that span of time.
Most of that was structural. So the actual sound, the timbres and the instruments and whatnot, those stayed pretty stable. I knew mostly what I wanted to do at the beginning. Once we kind of agreed on a course with the team, that most of the sounds and whatnot stayed pretty much the same. I improved things as I went along. I started acquiring more instruments and going back and replacing sampled instruments with real ones and whatnot. But for the most part, the feel stayed the same. The biggest thing was making the interactive elements of the score work, because it's an open world. Anything can happen at any point, or as far as the music is concerned, anything can happen at any point. The player could decide to get in a fight or not get in a fight, or run away from a fight, or go to a new realm, or encounter something randomly, and you don't know when that's going to happen. And so writing a score that would leave room for the unexpected, but also react when we wanted it to, that was the real thing that kind of evolved as we went along. And, finding the best way to do that was a trick.
Yeah, I bet. The combat music is really amazing, because, honestly, for the longest time, I've thought, well, turn-based combat is a little bit boring. A little bit dull because you're just kind of standing there waiting for someone to hit you. But but the way that the combat works in For the King is really tense. And the combat music that you've written, just, the way it escalates is just fantastic. I'm thinking of Combat Most Dire because it is. And it starts out very simply. But what was your thought process for writing the combat music?
So what I didn't want to have was just one piece of music that plays and you're in a fight and then you're done with the fight. And that felt kind of dull. And I wanted to make sure that the music escalated as the fight escalated. And very early on, we had to kind of make some decisions. Like, how do we want this to go? Do we want to have music that like branches? If the fight's going well for you, do we want it to become more heroic? Or if the fight's going very badly for you, do we want it to become more desperate? In the end, we decided that it would be the number of variables that our programmer would have to be looking at and feeding back into why is our middleware to do that would be kind of substantial, and it'd probably be simpler to treat it as escalating tension and make the music, fit that, but also cover a lot of ground. So it would be more intense, and the intensity as the player, if you're feeling like this is really desperate, hopefully would read as like nail biting terror, like will this dice roll come out right or will it go bad? Oh no. Or, if you are kicking butt and you're really doing well, hopefully it's going to read a little bit more like a heroic triumph over something particularly dire. And so each combat track is structured fairly similarly. There are three tiers of intensity on the interactive end. There's, tier one, which is the lowest tier, and two, and three. And basically, at different points in the fight, as certain amounts of overall percentage of damage are done, basically, or when people come down to certain levels of HP, overall percentage again, because you never know how far along you are going to be when you get in this fight, the combat music will escalate. And each section is kind of divided up into multiple parts that can kind of shuffle around depending on which way the dice roll in wise, so you never quite get the same thing twice. And then as you advance the fight, the tension level you know, the game will, the interactive audio engine will change states to be one of the higher tension levels. And so we'll move up to, you know, from tier one to tier two. And then the music will play until it hits a transition point in whatever tier you're on right now, and then we'll transition to the next tier. So you'll feel like, as you're in the fight, like, oh, I just did a bunch of damage to them, and then their big guy came out and smashed one of my guys, and he's down to 2 hit points, and then the music will ramp up and get more serious.
And again, you know, you've got to take so many things into consideration, like the sudden death of a member of your party. Yeah. Or
yeah, there are cues for, yeah, sudden death of a member of your party or sudden death of all of your party. There's like immediate like punch outs for that. Like, oh, we finished the fight and it ended in success. It ended in defeat, or it ended in total defeat where everyone in your party is dead and the game is over.
The whole process of making the music interactive is really fascinating. I'm just starting to learn about Wyze and other middleware that the composers and audio people use to make it all fit. And it's really fascinating.
I used FMOD for Fossil Echo and then moved to Wyze for this, and they both have very different functions and different you know, approaches to how they treat music, and I think that this was definitely the right choice for this. But you know, you can pretty much do whatever you'd want in each, you know, in any of these. It's just a matter of how it's organized and how it's approached, and the way that Wyze treats music is very different than how FMOD treats music. So you have to think about it a little bit differently, but you can achieve similar results. And in this case, it was it was probably the best way to do it for an open world system, you know, like this, where anything can happen at any point.
Yeah, because not only is it open world, but there are areas that are like procedural, so they're different every time. So
yep.
That's
exactly.
Another layer of complication, which is just, I don't know, it's just really fascinating. You mentioned working within your budget, and not every composer gets a huge AAA game budget for the music. So I'm just wondering if you can share some of the ways that you've learned to make the most of the budget that you do have and make the music sound like you spent a lot more on it.
Sure. Well, in this case, there was no recording budget whatsoever. So this was an exercise in trying to do as much myself as I can. And obviously, not everyone's going to have the same kind of skill set. I went to school for music education, so I got training in woodwind and brass and string playing in school. I'm not particularly good at some of those categories and some of those instruments, but I can do well enough to kind of, you know, make it happen. And one of the things I always say is, if you can play it 40 times, but you can get one good take out of those 40 times, that's the only take that the audience will ever hear, and you're okay then. You can, they'll never be the wiser for the fact that you've ruined it 39 times before you finally got a good one. Of course, now I've just said that, so now everyone knows that I ruined it 39 times. But in many cases, it was a matter of like, okay, what timbres do I have? How can I kind of do the thing I want to do? And then using all the tools at my disposal to make stuff that sounded good. So it's like, I don't have any low woodwinds, but I have pitch shifting tools in Logic. And if I employ them correctly, I have some plugins that I can use, and I can employ them correctly. And so I can take my clarinet and pitch shift it down, and it becomes a low bass clarinet or contrabass clarinet. And it doesn't quite sound real. It sounds a little bit wrong. But then again, if I use other things with it, it provides this extra layer of humanity that might be lacking in just like a sample bass clarinet or something like that. You know, things like, I don't have any low brass instruments, real low brass instruments like tubas or anything like that. And I'm not particularly good as a extreme low brass player anyway, but I wound up doing things like playing pedal notes on French horns and then pitch shifting them a bit to provide, you know, some of the low brass sounds in this. And, you know, things of that sort. So it's like, you know, playing instruments, you know, the general rule of thumb is, if you can have one live instrument playing at all times, then that's going to, it's a force multiplier, you know, for realism. If you have decent samples and you have one live instrument, that's going to bring a million times more life into everything than if you just have all, you know, all samples. Even if that live instrument isn't flawlessly played, it still can kind of, you know, it can bring this humanity and this life into things. And I kind of lucked out, because I decided very early on that our party of bards that were going to be accompanying us on our journey, maybe we're not like, you know, Carnegie Hall quality bards. And so if they weren't going to be the greatest bards, then I could get away with, you know, maybe some impassioned playing, but maybe not the most technically perfect. And if I was okay with that, then I would just kind of lean into the emotional side of it and the emotional effect, rather than maybe getting hung up on perfect technicality. My perfectionist side, of course, like, you know, protested, and I had to kind of like, you know, hit it with a blackjack until it shut up. Yeah. Stop. That's fine. It's okay. It'll be okay. And that just became part of the aesthetic in the end. You know, it's like, if it's not perfect, but it does the job and it sounds real, that's maybe better than if it was perfect and sampled and lacking in the humanity it might otherwise have. You know, obviously, it depends on your game. But in this case, I felt like it was the right choice.
Well, and the scale really fits the world, too. And like you say, I mean, it's a pretty rough world. And so, of course, they wouldn't necessarily bring their A-game musicians on the story missions with them. And, you know, some of them probably doubled as fighters anyway. So, Well, you've got some interesting things in the pipeline, too. Something completely different. Ambition, A Minuet in Power. It's set during the French Revolution. And that, it sounds like, is giving you a chance to visit the 18th century in music.
Yeah, it is really kind of awesome. Getting to write period music and trying to keep it as plausibly accurate as I can has been a real blast so far. You know, we're still kind of, you know, in early stages, but it has been quite a bit of fun to get to work with, you know, as many live musicians as I can and to kind of bring this stuff to life, hopefully in a way that fits the game well and that also serves the period well. I of course have a million like bits of apprehension about it, like what if the music is so authentic that no one can tell that it's original, or whatnot. So we have to like make sure we have actual themes for everyone so we can tie all this together. And so I have a million little thoughts about that, but it should be a lot of fun. And I've been enjoying it so far. You know, having grown up and played in orchestras and taken piano lessons and I teach classical voice, and so having, you know, taught a lot of music from this era, like, it's kind of, you know, been a constant companion through my life. And now getting to kind of take all those elements and put them in my brain and turn on the blender and then come out with new pieces of music that are influenced by all of these other things has been great. And then in the service of authenticity, I've just been able to like dig into all this music history stuff and look into, you know, look at books from college as a starting point and then find all these primary sources. I'm reading a book right now, a British musicologist who took frequent, like, he basically writes travel logs of his travels in France and Italy. And he just writes about it's fascinating. He just writes about, like, the music that he's encountering along the way. You know, like, the town church's choir was not so good, so he left after before the concert. You know, that kind of thing. Like, all these, like little comments like this in this. It's fascinating to kind of read these firsthand accounts of, you know, someone in basically this era. You know, it's a little bit before the revolution, but it's close enough that I can, you know, kind of get a feel for, like, what did this stuff sound like to someone at this time, you know, and what was, you know, and then, of course, you know, just looking at music history, like who's writing and what kind of influences did they have, and so on and so forth, and try to hit it as authentically as I can. I don't know, it's fun.
Yeah, I mean, it must be interesting to think about a time when all this music was brand new to people.
Yeah.
So, and any other projects you're working on that you can talk about?
I think I can talk about this one. I'm working on a game called Mythgard. It's a card game. It is a CCG, but it's a computer CCG, so a CCCG, I guess you'd say. But it is, you know, it kind of, there, you know, if you think of like a game like Hearthstone or something like that, it's a little bit along those lines, but it is in a cyberpunk mythology infused near future. So the old gods are still very much around, but they're pulling the strings of mega corporations and nations and whatnot, and there's magic and technology fusing in very unholy unions, and it's fascinating, and it lets me write these really big epic scores in a very different style than any of the other stuff that I've done recently. You know, infusing kind of retro synths and other electronics into orchestra and more acoustic instruments in a kind of very exciting way that I'm looking forward to.
That sounds amazing. And again, you know, a completely different change of pace from the other things that you've got going. So how can people find you on like social media and your website?
Yeah. My website is www.johnrobertmatz.com. I am at Twitter at John Robert Matz, one word, JohnRobertMatz. You can find like my Bandcamp and my albums and stuff like that from my webpage, or just johnrobertmatz.bandcamp.com. And I've got a Facebook page too you can probably search for and follow me there and see what updates I make, check out my music, etc., etc. Outside of that, you know, shoot me a message on Twitter and say hopefully you like my stuff or you hate my stuff, I don't know. That's basically it.
Awesome. Well, John Robert, it's been so much fun talking with you, and this is such a great soundtrack for The King. I've really been enjoying it, and I can't wait to hear what you do next. So thank you so much for taking some time.
You're most welcome. Thank you very much. I'm glad you enjoyed it. It's always an absolute pleasure to chat with you.